Church. It is a gift to get to be with you guys. Feel free to keep grabbing any coffee or any food back there. I say it's a gift because we believe God wants to use our time together today to speak to us and to challenge us and to bring unity through our diversity. If you are new to H2O, a special welcome to you, because today we're in our first part of a four-part sermon series called Hot Takes. And we're taking these 4 weeks to touch on race, sexuality, gender, and authority in the church. And today, specifically, we're going to be talking about race in the church. And before we dive in, we thought we would address one question in particular. Why are we talking about race? You may be thinking cross-sections of society struggle with racism and segregation, but surely not us, right? So why take a Sunday to discuss race in the church? And the reason is because, sadly, the church as a whole struggles mightily with the issue of race. So over 50 years ago, Martin Luther King Jr. famously said, 11 a.m. on Sundays are the most segregated time in America. And he was referring to worship services that would happen across America at 11 a.m. And about 50 years later, that sentiment still seems to be the case. Here are some Barna study stats that I found that illustrate that for us. So about 87% of churches in the U.S. are racially homogenous, which means that they're primarily made up of one race. In fact, the average church is 10 times more racially homogenous than the neighborhood that it exists in. And in a study done between 1990 and 2009, over 56 million immigrants had become U.S. citizens during that time. And of those 56 million immigrants, guess how many of them had become involved in the local church? The number is less than 1%. And most of those that did become part of a local church, they joined a church that was homogenous to their race. So even when you're looking at H2O Church in our context, we see that Columbus is about 61% white. We see that OSU's campus is about 67% white, but us as a congregation, we're about 85% white. And so what does all that mean? What do all these stats show us? Please hear me when I say this. It doesn't mean that it's bad for us to have a racial majority in the church, but it does seem to show how the church often struggles to connect with people who are different from us. Brooke Hempel is the vice president of research at the Barna Group, and she said, our research confirms the church is seemingly hindering racial reconciliation in the U.S. And besides these stats, there are many, many stories that also help illustrate how race is still an issue in the church. I was connecting with my friend Tori this week, and Tori went to a sister church of ours up in BG, and he's a black man, and now he pastors at a church down in Austin, Texas. And so during his first month down in Texas, Tori was speeding home after playing basketball with some of his friends from the church. And a cop pulls him over and then is like, hey, do you know why I pulled you over? And Tori's like, yeah, I was speeding. And so the cop says, oh, it looks like you also don't know how to respect authority. So, sir, I'm going to have to ask you to get out of the car. And Tori's caught a little bit off guard by this, but he's like, okay. He gets out. The cop starts talking to him. And at some point during this conversation, Tori folds his arms. And he didn't think twice about it, but the cop must have thought that he was reaching for a weapon. And so the cop pulls out his gun on Tori and says, stop right there, put your hands up. And Tori is totally blindsided by this. He has all these thoughts racing through his mind. And for some reason, the first thing that came to his mind was to just blurt out, sir, I'm a pastor. And then the cop just kind of looks at him for a little bit, and he's like, you're not a pastor. You don't look like a pastor. Where do you pastor at? And so Tori says the name of his church, and then the cop is like, you're not a pastor at that church. I go to that church. And then Tori says, well, you must not have been there for the past 4 weeks. So I've done highlights every single week for the past 4 weeks. And then Tori was telling me, he's like, yeah, that's the moment that I thought I was going to get shot was right then and there. Like, you don't say that to a cop. But thankfully, the cop was like, all right. He did some digging. He looked on the website, and he found out that, yes, indeed, Tori is a pastor at that church. And so he apologized. And if you know Tori at all, he is super gracious. He's quick to give people the benefit of the doubt. He's quick to mention that a vast majority of police are there to do a good job. But it's still sad to hear when a brother of Christ is treated like that by another brother in Christ. And sometimes it's tempting to hear a story like that and think like, okay, well, maybe that's an issue down in Texas, but not here in Columbus, and certainly not here within our church. And while I haven't heard a story like Tori's within our church, there are still many stories that could be shared. For instance, I've been part of this church for over a decade, and I love this church. But in my decade plus of leading within this church, I can only recall one moment where a fellow believer has come up to me and has said something like, Vivek, what's it like for you to be an Indian American and to be part of a predominantly white church? Like, if you're willing to share about that, I would love to listen. I can only remember one instance of that, and I get it. Like, it's a tough thing to bring up. It's a taboo subject to talk about race and to ask those sorts of questions. But on the flip side of that, I've had many instances within the church where people acknowledge my race in other ways. I've had people ask me to speak in an Indian accent in hopes that they could laugh at how I sound. I've had people ask me where I'm from, and when I said I grew up in Columbus, they say, no, where are you really from? And I've had people insinuate that they're not an innocent bite on Sundays is because I'm a Mr. Race. But go play basketball. I'm not an innocent bite to ask people to play on my team because I thought they didn't look like the part. Or I've hesitated to talk to people because I've been intimidated by the way they look. And so I share these stories not to make any specific people group feel bad. I share all this to emphasize race isn't just an issue that's out there in the world. And it's not just an issue that's out there at other churches. Race is an issue within our church. And if you're anything like me, race is an issue within your heart also. And all these stats and stories matter because they seem to be a far cry from what the early church was like. Like, if you read through the Gospels, if you read through Acts, if you read through some of the epistles, you quickly realize how powerful the early church's testimony was to the rest of the world because it would bring together Jews and Gentiles and Romans and Samaritans and people who are rich and people who are poor. All these people from different backgrounds would gather together and they would worship Jesus. And yet today, most churches, like we said, they are less diverse than the neighborhoods that they occupy. And so what can we do about this? How can we reconcile these issues of race in and out of the church? You know, some people respond to racial tension by just trusting other people groups. And on the opposite end, others believe we're in the middle to be colorblind and just try to ignore issues of race and overlook them. I would argue. And somewhere in the middle is this idea of the prime position to engage with the topic of race. Because rather than hatred, rather than colorblindness, rather than tolerance, you have the gospel. And through the gospel, we get a vision for what the church can be about. You may wonder, what kind of vision does the gospel give us? I'm going to highlight two brief ways that we see the gospel shed light on the issue of race. The first is this: the gospel emphasizes diversity. The gospel emphasizes diversity. One of the many verses that we can see this in is in Genesis 1:27, where it says, God created mankind in his own image. And the word image doesn't just mean people look like God. It means that each person is designed to represent God. And if you think about mankind, there are all sorts of cultures and ethnicities and backgrounds. And so rather than calling us to ignore our different races or to be colorblind, because if you think about it, we're valued. Celebrate each ethnicity meant to reflect God. And so the church can confidently assert that racism and discrimination in all its forms is evil because ethnic diversity was created by God to reflect God. And the second thing is this: the gospel emphasizes unity. Ephesians 4:1-6 is a great example of this. It says, as a prisoner for the Lord, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you've received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There's one body and one Spirit, just as you are called to one hope, one Lord, one faith, one baptism. God and Father of all. As God calls all who place their faith in Jesus to display our spiritual unity. And I love the way this passage details the path to that unity. Because it's not these other ways of being colorblind. It's not these other ways of trying to just ignore our differences or sweep them under the rug. But we see it in verse 2. It's by being humble. being gentle, being patient, and bearing with one another in love. In other words, take your eyes off yourself and seek to understand those around you. And so the church doesn't have to be a place where we pretend that differences don't exist. Instead, through understanding each other, we can cultivate a genuine unity in our diversity. And so to cultivate a little more understanding in our church, we're going to do something a little bit different today. We're going to have a panel of people from H2O come on up here and just share their experiences with us. And this panel is just an attempt to understand people who are maybe a little different from up. So I'm going to go ahead and invite the panel to come on up here. And just know people have this panel up here. Up here does not mean a black person up here does not. Each person here has unique experiences, and they are unique creations of God. But our hope is that through hearing some of these unique experiences, our church would be spurred on to hear others' unique experiences as well. Now, a few ground rules as people share: you may hear stories that make you sad. You may hear stories that cause you to not want to engage. You may hear ideologies that you disagree with. You may hear things that cause you to feel defensive about yourself or about our church. Whatever the response may be, our hope is that we'd first cultivate a heart of listening. Let's just listen to what our brothers and sisters have to say. You know, later today, we're going to dig in a little bit more into what are ways we can respond, what are ways we can move forward. But first, we got to listen, right? So without further ado, please welcome the panel by giving them a round of applause. Get this out of the way so you can see your lovely faces. There you go. That's totally. All right. So real quick, would love for you guys to just introduce yourselves, share your name, share what you do for a living or what occupies your time the most, and then what your racial or ethnic identity is. And then would love to hear, why'd you say yes to even being part of this panel in the first place?
My name is Jill Lewis. I am an ESL teacher at Olentangy School District, so I teach all of the English language learners at that school. And I am white Caucasian. I said yes to this because I am in a journey of learning more about just racism in the places that I live and being anti-racism and sticking up for that and fighting for fighting against racism. And so this is something that I'm excited about right now.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joy Grace Chen. I'm a grad student at OSU. And I'm Chinese, I'm kind of American, and I said yes to being on this panel because I felt separate from my relationship with the church for a while, and it's starting to come together. God's teaching me a lot. I'm also just in process, and I just felt like God was asking me to take this step of faith in like sharing where I'm at with you guys. So,
My name is Luis. I'm a digital products owner at Wendy's, overseeing all our digital operations in Canada. I am black, African. I'm originally from Ghana and West Africa. I said yes to this because I felt like I've had a unique journey being an immigrant here over the last 5 years, and I kind of felt like I had a different perspective to share.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lisa Coleman. I am a medical student at OSU. I am African Native American, and I'm doing this panel because I like unity within people, and I think that when a church is facilitated, it's easier to go out.
It's beautiful. The panel was given questions beforehand to consider, so they had some time to think about these questions. Through their responses, they may share some verses, they may share some next steps forward for us to consider as a church. And so I know some of you guys take notes during a sermon. Would encourage you guys, if you guys do that anyways, to try and do that as well during this panel time, because we truly believe God wants to speak through this time as well and the things that people share. So yeah, we can just start with you, Joe, since you got the mic over there. You grew up in a homogenous white community, and yet you're one of our church's biggest advocates for fostering unity and racial diversity. So would love to just hear, could you share a little bit about how God has grown this heart of advocacy for you and how you would describe what it means to be an advocate for racial unity?
So that's supposed to be one. Yeah, I grew up in white suburbia, I would say. Church was mostly white. I was homeschooled, and I went to private school, and I went to public school, all of those predominantly white. Sports, extracurriculars were just full of Caucasians. And I would say that my parents started bringing in different areas of culture and race by having a relationship with International Friendship, the organization. And so we had some people from around the world, like, celebrate holidays with us or stay for 6 to 8 months. And then when I was 13, I went on my first mission trip to Honduras with my dad's church. And then that's where I really began to fall in love with, like, different cultures and the richness in culture. And after that, I went on 4 other mission trips to Honduras within the next 5 years. And then I went on a very remote homestay, I guess you would say, in Botswana, Africa, in a remote village, and just going there to people there, the water, no electricity, didn't speak English for 4 years, was just going there to seeing with all students whose families are from other countries and just growing to love culture and different ethnicities. So yeah, that's where my heart has really grown from kind of what I grew up in to trying to be around more, like, diverse peoples and learn a lot more from that because I see the richness in that. Advocating for racial unity, especially in the church, I think for me it has started with educating myself because I am very naive in a lot of things. So I have been listening to a podcast called Speaking of Racism, also a book called White Fragility that I'm reading, which is about why it's hard to talk about racism with white people. So both of those have been opening my eyes to a lot of my implicit bias and my kind of racist ideas that I wasn't aware of, and so it's that awareness and then continue where we're at, conversations with people. And
that's great. Thanks for sharing, Jill. Joy Grace, we can go to you next. You had the opportunity this past summer to go to East Asia with H2O Church, and as a second-generation Chinese woman, the trip impacted you on many levels. Could you share with us how God has been using your time in East Asia to shape the way that you think about race in the church?
Yeah, I think on one level, being in East Asia, God really used that time to just show me the beauty of a kind of ethnic and cultural heritage that I realized maybe for the first time that I'd spent a lot of my life trying to ignore or erase or move on from. So yeah, that was like a big step, I thought, just kind of in my personal journey, and one that I really feel like God's been leading me on in terms of reconciliation with my own identity and figuring out a lot of that stuff. But I think on the next level, God also just gave me the opportunity to, and it was the tailors into that, and invite my into that. I was there with Shin one day, and it was a team of all out, and kind of how we talked about food as a team, and I just shared how I was realizing that food is a really big part of my cultural identity, and I just noticed that people on the team would sometimes evaluate, like, you could use, like, evaluative language with the food, like, oh, this is disgusting, or this is good, or this is bad, and I was, like, noticing a response myself to that. So I was, when I was thinking and praying about it, and what I brought up with them is that, yeah, food is tied to cultural identity for me, and food is also tied to just a really hurtful moment that I remember from high school where I brought my favorite Chinese snack to share with my classmates and they spit them out. And so I think just I was, and I think also like as I was starting to realize, yeah, like I've measured myself by maybe like Western standards or by American standards for a really long time, just and never really felt like I measured up. So it was family background or etiquette, cuisine or physical appearance. I just knew that we asked them if they would be willing to serve me in the framing by just using maybe other than which talk about the food that we were eating. That felt like a really big step of faith to bring that up. I think there was a lot of stuff going on in my head before I was like wrestling with like this. I feel like I'm making a big deal out of something that's not a big deal, or would they really understand? But when I shared, the team said they were just really honored that I had shared that with them, and then the way that they responded, just being in, trying to be more intentional about how they were speaking, was really honoring to me. And I think I saw in that, maybe for the first time, a picture of what like reconciliation and unity and diversity could look like in the church, because I saw there was just sacrifice required on both ends, like sacrifice required to share my perspective and then sacrifice for them to kind of listen and hear that perspective and try to serve me in that. And yeah, that was really, I think, beautiful to me and just encouraging. And I think what mattered to me the most, certain thing for that moment was less that kind of built this moment. We'd built trust and we'd built unity out of that. Mm. Yeah, and I just thought, I was like, wow, I feel like this is how we as a church are called to serve each other. Mm.
That's really good. Yeah, I love how you highlighted how it's a step of faith on both ends. Like, it's a vulnerable thing for you to allow people to see this aspect of your life and to express a way that you are feeling hurt or feeling sad and connecting it to, like, this previous time in your life. And I think it connects with what Jill was saying also before. It's like, once that's put out there and shared, the way that people respond in that moment, it's a pretty powerful moment. And so as you were sharing, Jill, as well, like, there's an aspect of, okay, I don't need to be offended by it personally. I actually want to seek understanding and listen and see what's happening for this person and what's happened in their life. Learn from God, so that's really, really powerful to hear. Some things that you learn about that. Luis, in the U.S. before you moved here, and how have your experiences compared to what you heard?
To start with, I wrote down my answers. I totally blanked out, so I'm going to wing it. So in Ghana, like, everybody looked like me. So it's not something I had to think about, like, race issues. But then every now and then, I mean, we news travels. We hear about what happens here and the police brutality and the racial biases that exist here. But I didn't think much of it. After I moved here, I may have experienced some of those issues, but then I may have been oblivious to them. I can give you an example that someone called out to me. I worked in a place where in our kitchen we used to have food bowls and everything, a bunch of food there for us to eat in the kitchen for our work. And I thought, I love watermelon. There's a way about how the watermelon crashes in your mouth and releases the juices. It tastes so good. Anyway, so I thought he was picking out all the best parts for me before anybody else gets to it. He does that, and they talk about how black people like watermelon. He was let go. But I didn't know until somebody mentioned it to me. It wasn't an issue. But for me, the fact that I may not necessarily have experienced it doesn't mean that other people aren't, because I hear about it still in the news. It's not like when I was in Ghana, I heard about it, I came here, I don't hear about it, I still do. And for me, the biggest thing right now, being a new father, is that I have a son, and I may have to give a talk to him that my parents never had to give to me about he being himself, and that might not just be enough, because there may be other people who see him a different way than what we all know him to be, and I may be powerless in when it comes to somebody treats him in future. Somebody treats him in a way, and that's one thing that scares me, and it plays in the back of my mind all the time that, hey, I may have to tell him these kind of things, and he may have to have that in the back of his mind, and other people may not necessarily have to go through that.
I remember sitting down with you when we were first talking, and you were just extremely gracious to this individual who had got all this watermelon together and given to you. And in a way, it was like, oh, whatever, I can dust that off. That's not a big deal. But I love what you're saying about how even though it may not feel as intense or strongly, like racism towards you, you may not like feel that or internalize that as strongly, you still see the sense of like, oh, this impacts many people around me. And because of that, it's something that you want to be an advocate for. And I think that's like a really good not so for any of us as individuals, whether it's something that we feel like it's a strong impact on us or not. So thanks for sharing about it. Lisa, so as an African-American who spent a church, would you share with us some of your experiences and how God has used them to shape you?
So I grew up in a very diverse family. I think about 75% of the UN is represented in my family. Not even lying. So my parents, because of that, my parents, how they raised me, they did a really good job sheltering me from issues of race. When we were taught growing up describing people, race was not one of those things. We use like the Crayola method if we had to describe skin color. So like, I'm a nice honey brown, you know, Joy Grace is a nice apricot, Jill is a nice peach, and then Luis is, you know, chocolate. So like, that's the way and even if we were asked to describe someone, color is probably hardly ever mentioned. We were taught to describe people by their person. You know? But I did notice that there was a certain look that was a little bit more preferred, especially like with boys. So I remember we had like a Sunday school lesson teaching us that how when we get to heaven, we'll get new bodies. And I remember like after I was rejected by one of my guys, peoples, I went home and I prayed and asked God, God, please let my new body in heaven be made peach with blue eyes and strawberry blonde hair. And so I thought that was the look that was, you know, more accepted. It didn't occur to me, race, again, it didn't occur to me. I thought that whenever I was rejected, it was because I wasn't smart enough or I wasn't pretty enough. Race was still never a thing. Until I got into high school, I remember I was walking to a classroom and one of my friends was like, Lisa, did you know you're the only black person in that class? And then all of a sudden I had an epiphany. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm black. And I really didn't know. Then it was like the moment. And when a big change like that happens, one of my friends described it as you swing in a pendulum. You go from like one extreme to the other until you reach a happy medium. So I freaked the heck out. And I swung towards like the extreme of I want to be as white as possible. Straight hair, make sure my speech didn't have any kind of Ebonics, like typical. I avoided everything black because I noticed that in this world, at least back when I was in high school, that black wasn't equated to love and success and happiness. And these are things that I wanted. But the Lord was not having that. So he sent me to New York for graduate school after I graduated college. And it was a life-changing experience. Mm-hmm. I got a culture shock in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. I've never seen so many shades of beautiful. And I saw so many different cultures, like not just of just my own culture, but the swing bodies culture. Like I've never seen so many images of different people. Mm-hmm. And woman of color allowed me to swing the pendulum hair to the way I had to embracing. And then the Lord called me back to Ohio to do medical school. And eventually he called me to attend H2O. And unfortunately, both of the environments were filled with less diversity than I had come to be accustomed to. And H2O has grown on me. Like, it's really great. But when I first got here, I noticed that because I looked so different from a lot of people, I got kind of unconscious rejection, especially during the meet and greets. So I would sit in a sea of peach people and no one would want to talk to me. So I was alone and isolated for a few months. But if you flip the script and look at it from God's perspective, it forced me to come to God to let him lead me to the people who he wanted me to speak to because I was just doing it on my own. Because of that, I was like, okay, Lord, I surrender. And then he led me to multiple incredible groups before I people. And I've never felt so much love ever of the table. I think that seeing color is not a bad thing because being colorblind just deprives you from appreciating differences because, you know, we're all made in God's image. But I think that when race or when someone looks or acts different from you, keeps you from engaging with someone, you deprive them of the gift of knowing God's love only the way that you uniquely can express it. And everyone here is an answer to someone's prayer. And what happens if that person you hesitated to talk to, you were the answer to their prayer. And by not talking to them, you've deprived them of that honor. So.
Thanks for sharing, Lisa. I think there's something really beautiful and what you shared, the sliver of your story that you've shared with us is it's complex. Like, there's, like, really beautiful redemptive moments, and there's also really not as, like, painful, sad moments, and they coexist, like, within each one of us. How God is using even the painful moments to bring redemption, but it doesn't change the fact that those are still painful. So thanks for being willing to share about those with us. We'll conclude with one more question, and this the same question for everyone, so we can just start down with Jill and then work on the way down. The question is this: what's one thing you're praying that our church takes away from today's conversation on race and the church? Obviously, we don't want it to just stay as like, oh, that was nice, we had a nice panel, and we had a great Sunday morning where we got to talk about, but what's something you hope our church actually takes forward from this space?
Yeah. I would say I have big hopes and dreams for our church with fighting against racism, but for today specifically, I think it's kind of like a self-assessment sort of thing to figure out where you are in this. I don't, what I've been learning up is like there's not racist, and I think a lot of us relate with that, and then there's anti-racism, and so the anti-racism part is the fighting against racism, and so I would love to see our church be full of anti-racist people who are fighting against racism in our church and in our community, and I think that comes from, yeah, educating ourselves, having conversations, finding ways that we do have biases that we don't realize or stereotypes or different things like that, that we can just be taking little steps to fight against that and have conversations that are hard, especially amongst each other.
That's really cool. To go along with like what you're saying about anti-racism, I remember once within the church someone had asked me to like do an Indian accent, and I think after a while I just kind of become numb. I was like, oh, well, it gets a cheap laugh, so I'll do it. Mm-hmm. And there was a friend of mine within the church who was white who actually interjected and was like, hey, do you have any idea how offensive that could be to say that? Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, like someone you're speaking about in this anti-racism I think is amazing. Thanks for sharing about that.
I just wanted to read two passages. Ephesians 5, 1 to 2. Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children and walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. And then 1 John 3, 16. By this we know love, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. And I feel like what those verses say is that, Jesus has sacrificed for us, so we're called to sacrifice for each other in the church. And just my hope and prayer for our church, and for myself personally also, is just that we would be willing to enter into uncomfortable spaces, and that we would be willing to have conversations outside of our norm with people who look different from us, who have different backgrounds from us. I think it may always just feel more natural and safer to be with people who we're comfortable with, but I don't think God calls us to stay in our comfort zones, so for that, just keeping in mind, size for each other, Jesus has made for us, that we can have peace.
Really cool.
I would love for us all to...
That's a really great picture of... Yeah, you stepping out of your comfort zone and other people stepping out of their comfort zone. And I feel like sometimes there's like at least I've felt this, there's a fear of stepping out of my comfort zone because it's like, what if I say something dumb? Or what if I say something offensive? Or what if like, you know, I don't know how to even go about having these conversations in the first place. I think you've also modeled just a ton of grace of like, oh yeah, like that's part of the learning process as we step out of our comfort zones. It might be a little messy and we're not going to hold that against other people. We just want to just start the conversation. So thanks for sharing that. That's huge.
For me, I think it would be great if we don't just let this remain an exercise or a sermon, but then we, for each and every one of us in here, we go out and also help to prevent some of these things that some people are going through. I grew up in Ghana, like it's a very religious country, like, justice, essence of people are Christians, all go championed by the church, things with education, healthcare, even sometimes prison reform and other things that people face. But it's a little different here, or maybe I just don't see it. But I feel like we could do a whole lot more to, as individuals, just to first, even little steps like changing the way we think about people when we just see them for the first time and are having that prejudice or initially judging people when we see them. I feel like that would go a long way, and also just stepping in when we see that people are being abused. Mm-hmm. So
that's one thing I think we could do to help.
That's great. Yeah, I definitely see that, and just like culturally, it can be very taboo for a church to step into spaces that might involve social justice. But the picture that you're describing to me as we were talking about what it looks like in Ghana, I was like, man, that sounds like there's a lot of redemption that comes out of the church and the communities that they exist in. So, yeah, thanks for even just giving us a picture of what that could look
statement
like.
Statement off of about how, and my statement off of a script that he had to go out to get talks about how we would be onefold. In order to talk to people who are different than you, it's most of us, it's not innate ability. It was an innate ability of me. And so my hope is that the church has courage to ask God to give them that ability. Because it might just be something that he has to walk you through. To give you that ability and to make room in your heart for that kind of interaction. So that you can contribute to God bringing everyone into one nice, colorful fold. So.
That's great. Yeah, I love how you're emphasizing it's not something that we can just muscle up and be like, all right, I'm just going to start doing this, and we're going to make it happen, and we're going to do it on our own strength, but we're going to have to depend on the Spirit to actually give us the courage and give us the compassion and give us the desire to seek understanding. So thanks for giving that picture to us as well. The conversation, the purpose of this panel is just ways that the conversation started. I wish we had all of you time that we could continue to ask questions, experience. I wish there's ways that we could get your hopes, all of you up here. This is just meant for some of your experiences and something as we move forward as a church. So can we please give a round of applause for the panel? If you guys are interested to get to... Yeah, that is definitely worth cheering about, for sure. Really excited about the panel. He's wanting some more panel time. Lisa, Luis, Joy Grace, Jill, you guys are amazing. Thanks for even just coming up here and vulnerably sharing with us what your experience has been like within the church. If you have questions for the panel... if you have questions and want to just connect with them more about something they shared, two things. One, at the 11:11 service at Hitchcock, we're going to have a Q&A at 1 p.m. there. Connect if you're able to make it. If not, please mark this on your Connect card. I know that they would be of our church more than happy to get to connect with you. We wrap up today. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about this question. Where do we go from here? Like, what do we do next? I love the thoughts that our panel shared in terms of where do we go from here. So please tuck those away, and those are going to be related to what we talk about next. But where do we go from here? Three quick implications for this. The first is this. I should actually open up to the page that has that those three implications. The first one is this. We should listen. Keep listening. Let's continue listening to each other. So if people are truly made in the image of God, then we owe them our attention. And when we say listen, we're not just saying, oh, Lisa shared. That's a bummer that she said some really painful stuff. I guess I should be nicer to her. When we say listen, we're actually wanting to get to know people even more. And this is a good habit for any relationship, but especially for ones where we're different from each other. So you don't have to know all the right ways to respond. You don't have to know all the right things, the traits that they share. You just need to take an interest around a person as an image bearer of God. Let's learn. We need to learn what the issues are, and we need to learn how they affect the people who are around us. So there are a lot of hot-button topics revolving around race, topics like immigration, affirmative action, Black Lives Matter, or BLM, as it's also called. And I got a chance to engage with this past week with my sister. I have two sisters, and both of them live in Los Angeles. They're both teachers out there, and one of them in particular works very closely with BLM. And as I spoke to my sister, who is working closely with BLM, we discussed some things that happen within the circles that she's in. And a common response to the phrase Black Lives Matter in some circles is an iteration of the phrase All Lives Matter. And as we were speaking, I couldn't imagine my sister coming up to me and saying something like, Vivek, I've been really hurt by something you've done, and I feel like... And for me to hear her say something like that to me, and for me to look her in the eye and say, well, don't you know that you're not my only sister? Don't you know that I have another sister and her life matters also? You need to stop being so self-absorbed. Like, I would never say that. In fact, I couldn't imagine saying anything to my sister besides, yes. Yes, your life does matter. And so similarly, the only response to someone who says Black Lives Matter is yes. Yes, they do. Every single Black life matters. And that's not meant to be a political statement. It's meant to be a biblical statement out of what we've seen today. Because if God says that each person is made in his image, then the church can wholeheartedly say, yes, yes, your life matters. And then after you've acknowledged that truth, after you've spoken into that, you can ask something like, can you tell me more about that? Can you tell me more about the anger you're feeling? More, can you tell me more about the hurt that you're feeling? Because I want to, I don't get where more about. So help me learn about it. Maybe it's because I don't know what the phrase Black Lives Matter means. So help me understand. Just help me understand and then help me see if there's a way I can help. Because your life truly does matter. So we just had this panel, and I imagine at some point someone thought to themselves, you know, I don't know if I really get it. I don't get why Joy Grace wanted to distance herself from her Chinese heritage. I don't get why Jill is so passionate about advocating for minorities within the church. I don't get why Lisa thinks people in our church might feel uncomfortable around her. Or I don't get why Luis wants the church to take an active role in social justice. But let me ask them, because maybe I would understand a little bit more. And as we humbly seek to learn, we will communicate love and respect to the people who are around us. And so first we listen, and then second we learn, and then third is we love. I think we love. Maybe you're sitting here and you're listening to me, or you're listening to the panel, and you're thinking to yourself, you know, I've never actually had any of those experiences. The family doesn't know if I can even relate right now with one another in love, because that's what family does. Family leaves their comfort zones in order to love each other. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm a second generation Indian, and my wife is half Mexican and half Caucasian, and so our wedding weekend was like the Model UN, I thought. It was people from India, people from Europe, people from Mexico, and not to mention people all across the U.S. were there. And we'd invited all these people, expecting that many of them would not come because of the distance, but apparently they love us and they wanted to celebrate with us, so a lot of them came. And so all these folks flew in, and honestly, it was pretty awkward at first. Like, people didn't really know what to say to each other, but at some point, people started walking up to the people they didn't know, and they began to talk to one another. It was as if they were like, you know what, I don't know these people. I don't even know if I can understand anything they're going through right now. But I love Erica and Vivek. At one point, I saw my football coach from Lima, Ohio, talking to Erica's uncle from Mexico, along with my cousin from India. And from what I know, the three of them have nothing in common with each other, besides the fact that they know and love Erica and I. And so they chose to get to know each other because of that. And in my mind, that's kind of like what the church is meant to be like, right? Like, there's all these people around us, and we have very little in common with most of them. But because we love Jesus, we are willing to walk across the room and love someone that we don't know. And when the church consistently does that, we will give the world a glimpse of God's kingdom, a glimpse of what it looks like when Jesus comes back. And we get a foreshadowing of that day in Revelation 7:9. It says, after this, I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. And I love that diverse. God could have done away with skin country. Because each culture, each language, each person shows something unique about the God we worship. And so one day, that'll be what the church looks like. And although we're nowhere close to looking like that right now, how great would it be if H2O Church, if anyone could walk into the worship service or a small group, and even though we didn't look anything like them, they could come in and they could feel welcomed and feel understood. And for that to happen, we're going to have to be the ones who step out of our comfort zone. And we believe that's totally possible as a church. So listen, learn, and love. And if you're looking for practical ways to do that, here are three practical ways we want to try and do that. First is this. Come and join us in the balcony of Hitchcock for a Q&A on Race and Church when we're just going to talk some more. And if you can't make it to that, we're going to be discussing this in our life groups this weekend, or this week, and in our small groups this week. And if you can't make it to those either, just mark down on your Connect card that you want to connect more about this. Second is this. Come back next week and join us for our sermon Q&A on the area of race. So just like in relationship and standing in relationship. And then the third thing is this. Just grab a meal or grab a drink with someone in the church who's different than you this week. Get to know each other. Hear each other's stories. Ask each other questions. Because we hope that gathering around a meal together and connecting is a normal rhythm of our church where we seek understanding with each other. And one way that we hope to foster a culture of this within our church is that we're going to continue to do this church-wide meal that we do every Thanksgiving. So as some of you know, each year we host a massive Thanksgiving dinner on campus. And our hope is that through these dinners, we get to implement some of these principles that we're talking about today. We just want to get to know people, and we want to get to do that over a meal and seek understanding. So a quick recap of the practicals of listen, learn, and love. Come to the Q&A if you can. Come back next week and invite one or two people that you don't know as well to share a meal with people. It's cool because that last one, grabbing a meal with people, it's something that Jesus often did with people. And if he do it with people he had very little, and he gave also do it with people that called communion. He gathered his disciples together and he said, okay, I know you guys come from different backgrounds, but you're going to come together at a table like a family to remember me and remember what I did for you. Take some bread that represents my body. Take some drink that represents my blood. And so the practice of communion is meant to remind us of the ideal dinner table, a loving family that is brimming with diversity and celebrating unity in the body of Christ. That's what communion connotated then, and that's what communion connotates now. So let's end our time together today by coming together, taking bread, taking juice, and remembering Jesus. Let's remember that his death paid the penalty of sin, and his resurrection promised complete redemption for us in the world to come, and we start being part of that redemption now in the world as well. And if you're still figuring out what you believe about Jesus, just Jesus. Come, take the bread, take the juice if you need gluten-free. It's over to your right over there. And let's remember what Jesus did for us, not just reconciling us to himself, but also reconciling us to each other. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, you are amazing, you are beautiful, and you are so, so good. And thank you for making us in your image. Thank you that each one of us gets to be your image bearer and gets to reflect a little aspect of who you are. And so, Lord, we just tell you that as a church, we want to do that. We want to reflect you through our unity and through our diversity. And we just ask you to help us, Lord. I pray that the conversations that we started today wouldn't just stay here today, but that they would continue on as a way for us to manifest unity through diversity. We love you, and we ask all this in Jesus' name.